Therefore, still your heart. Use the treasure of repentance well, keep the blessing of remorse in your soul, however late it has arrived. Don't forget that worrying doesn't solve our problems. Put your trust in the Lord and in our brotherly devotion. Rest your troubled heart, for many of us have already gone the same way as you. At these generous words I rested my head against his shoulder and wept. Chapter 5, Undertreatment. Are you Clarence's ward? The question was put to me by a young man with a singularly kind expression. He smiled as he entered, carrying what looked like a large medical bag. I nodded that I was, and he introduced himself. I am Lizier's, your brother. My director, assistant Dr. Henry Luna, has placed you under my care as long as you need treatment. Are you a medical assistant? I asked. I am a visiting attendant in health service. As such, I not only help with the nursing but also go on rounds, alerting the doctors when help is needed, and attending to the needs of newly arrived patients. Noting my interest, he went on. There are many such assistants here in the Astral City. Naturally, as a newcomer, you are still unaware of the extent of our activities. Just to give you an idea, there are over 1,000 patients in this ward alone, and this is one of the smallest buildings in our hospital. This is truly wonderful, I exclaimed. Lizier's, perceiving that I was about to continue repeating my praises, rose quickly from his chair and carefully began his examination. Your intestinal zone shows serious lesions and unmistakable signs of cancer, your liver is ruptured in several areas, and your kidneys evidence signs of premature failure. Do you know what that means? Yes, the doctor explained it to me yesterday. These disturbances are all of my own doing. Noting my obvious embarrassment at this confession, he continued. In the group of 80 patients under my care, 57 are in the same condition as you. Did you know that other patients arrive mutilated? Those who have misused their sight arrive without eyes. Others who have used the gift of agility in crime come to us paralyzed or legless. Still others who have lived sexually depraved lives enter spirit life totally insane. The Astral City is not a settlement of triumphant spirits, in the common sense of the word. We are happy because we have constructive work to do, and there is job in every corner of our colony because the Lord blessed us with the opportunity to serve. He paused briefly, and I exclaimed, "Please go on with your explanation, Lizier's. I feel so peaceful and relieved. Isn't this a heavenly abode for the spiritual elect?" Lizier's smiled and answered, "Let's keep in mind the old teaching, many are called but few are chosen." Gazing at the distant horizon, flooded with memories from his own past, he continued, "Many religions on earth summon us to the celestial feast. No one who has once felt the existence of God can deny that in good conscience. Yes, many are called but few answer the call. Most of mankind accepts a different invitation instead. We waste our opportunities, straying from our chosen path, allowing our whims to rule our lives and thoughtlessly destroying our bodies. The ultimate result is that thousands of us leave the world in a state of confusion, countless multitudes of insane, diseased and ignorant spirits wander as you did in the spirit spheres close to the earth." Seeing my astonishment, he inquired, "Did you believe that physical death brings us to miraculous places? We must work hard and perform difficult services to achieve spiritual growth. If we have debts on the planet, we must inevitably return to repay them, regardless of the progress we have made, breaking the chains of hatred and replacing them with the sacred bonds of love. It wouldn't be fair to ask others to clear the field in which we ourselves have sown thorns. That is what is meant, my friend, by the saying, 'Many are called but few are chosen.' The Lord forgets no one, yet so few of us remember him." Confronted with the idea of individual responsibility, and remembering my own errors, I could not help but decry my perversity. But before I had time to vent my remorse, my kind attendant lifted up his hand and spoke. "Stop. Let us concentrate on the work to be done. Those who are sincerely repentant must learn to be silent and start anew. He carefully proceeded with a magnetic treatment, and then, while treating the area around my lower intestines, he continued his explanation. Have you noticed the specialized treatment of your cancerous zones? You see, all honest work in the field of medicine is based on loving care, but the actual healing is left to the patient. You will be treated with great care, and will feel as fit as you did as a youth on earth. You will work hard, and I believe you will become one of the best assistants in the Astral City. However, the case of your infirmities will stay with you until you have eliminated all traces of your indiscretions and misuse of your health which still remain in your spirit body. Our earthly body, so often misused, is given to us as a blessed instrument through which we can cure our spirit, if we dedicate ourselves to the task. I meditate deeply on what I had just heard, thinking on the infinite mercy of God, and was moved to tears. Lysias calmly finished the day's treatment and thus spoke. Tears are purifying medicine when they aren't caused by feelings of revolt. So cry, my friend, and ease your heart. Let us bless our physical body with its countless microscopic cells, so humble and precious, so detested yet so sublime for the service they render us. Without them, how many thousands of years we would spend wrapped up in the mists of ignorance. Thus speaking, Lysias laid a gentle hand on my head and took his leave. Chapter 6, Precious Advice. The following day, after the evening prayer, Clarence came to see me accompanied by my attendant. Radiating kindness, he asked affectionately, "How are you? A little better, I hope." Like any patient on earth who suddenly finds himself the center of attention, I was moved to self-pity. Reverting to my old habit of abusing brotherly love, I began to complain. "I do feel a little better, but I am still suffering a great deal. I hurt below my stomach and I feel a strange sense of anguish in my heart. My cross has been heavy, my friends. I never knew I could withstand so much suffering. Now that I can think clearly again, I feel sure that these trials have sapped all of my remaining strength." Clarence listened attentively, not showing the least sign of impatience. He even seemed interested, and his attitude encouraged me to continue. "Not only that, my moral sufferings are really indescribable. Now that the outside storm has subsided, thanks to the assistance I have received here, I've had to face a storm within my soul. What has become of my wife and children? I wonder whether my eldest child, my only son, has followed the plans I made for him. And what about my dear daughters? And my wife, who was sure she would die of loneliness if we were ever parted, what of my wonderful wife? I can still feel her tears from my last moments on earth. I can't say how long I've been living this nightmarish separation. My continuous suffering has robbed me of all sense of time. Where is my poor wife? Weeping besides cold ashes? Or at the gates of death herself? What bitter sorrow! What a terrible fate for a man devoted to his family! Very few have gone through as much as I'm sure. Why, even on earth I suffered years of vicissitudes, bitter disappointments and infirmities, and was granted only a few hours of happiness in return. Then I was subjected to painful physical death, followed by unceasing torture in spirit, and a never-ending succession of miseries and tears. Is there no meaning of attaining peace? As much as I may wish to adopt an optimistic attitude, I can't help feeling heavy-hearted and full of grief. What an unfortunate fate, generous benefactor! By that time my feelings of self-pity had reached such proportions that my words gave way to tears. Clarence, however, rose calmly and asked simply, "My dear friend, do you really seek your spiritual cure?" I nodded in assent and he went on, "Then learn not to speak so much of yourself and your sufferings. Self-pity is a symptom of mental illness, which is time-consuming and difficult to cure. It is imperative that you create new trains of thought and control your words. The only way to spiritual balance is to open your heart to the divine light. If you consider the necessary effort to be an oppressive burden or see the struggle for redemption as an imposition, it is a sure sign of spiritual blindness. The more you dwell on your own painful experiences, the more you bind yourself to them. You can be sure that the same Father whom shelters and watches over you will also care for your loved ones on earth. We should certainly regard the family as a sacred institution, but always keep in mind that it is just a small branch of the universal family under the loving guidance of one divine Father. You can count on us to resolve your present problems and sketch plans for your future, but neither you nor we have the time to waste on your complaints. We in this colony accept the hardest toil as a welcome opportunity for ascent, remembering while we plod along, weighted down with debts, that Providence is unsurpassing in its love. If you, too, wish to stay with us, you must learn to think properly. Meanwhile, my tears had dried. His words had brought me back to my senses. I was ashamed of my own weakness and I adopted a different attitude. While in the flesh, continued Clarence, didn't you compete for lucrative positions, knowing their advantages? Didn't you appreciate the legitimate means of increasing the welfare of your loved ones? Weren't you engaged in obtaining just fees in the interest of adding to the comfort and stability of your family? Here the program is the same, only the details differ. On earth, conventionalities and monetary gains are the ruling forces, whereas here we aim at constructive work with lasting benefits to the immortal spirit. We look on suffering as a means to enrich the soul, and on each suffering as a step towards our divine goal. Can you see the difference? Weak souls resist service and remain inactive, venting their complaints to all. Strong ones, though, accept the task given them as constructive steps on the path towards perfection. Mind you, no one will blame you for missing your earthly family or would ever think of extinguishing your source of sublime feelings. Nevertheless, you must remember that tears of despair help nothing. If you really love your earthly family and wish to be useful to them, you must first accept your present condition cheerfully. A long pause ensued. Clarence's advice has changed the current of my thoughts and I began to ponder on his wisdom. While I was still immersed in deep reflection, my benefactor, like a father who forgets the waywardness of his child and recommences a lesson with the same serenity, asked again with a bright smile. Well, how are you now? A little better? Pleased and comforted to feel I was forgiven, like a little boy anxious to learn, I replied. I am better now, to better understand the divine will. Chapter 7, Lysias Explains. Lysias came daily for my treatment and Clarence continued to visit me regularly. I began to feel at ease as I endeavored to adapt myself to my new situation. I noticed, though, that I would quickly relapse any time I began to dwell on my problems. The anguish, the fear of the unknown, and the discomfort of maladjustment would all return. Yet, in spite of everything, I felt a certain inner stability. I derived great pleasure from leaning out of my window and gazing at the vast horizon. I was impressed by the difference between my surroundings here and on Earth. Nearly everything seemed to be an improved copy of Earth, the colors were more harmoniously blended, and the very substance of things to be more delicate. The ground was carpeted with greenery and I could see large trees, rich orchards and delightful gardens everywhere. A range of hills with light-crowned summits stood beyond the plain on which the astral city was situated, and graceful buildings appeared at regular intervals a short distance away. These buildings, of various styles, had one thing in common, a profusion of flowers at their entrances. I noticed some charming little bungalows among them, surrounded by colorful roses springing up from among the ivy that covered the walls in contrasting colors. Birds with brilliant plumage flew about, alighting in groups from time to time on the tall, bright white steeples that reached for the sky. As I continued to watch curiously from my window, I was surprised to find some domestic animals among the trees some distance away. During these periods of deep musing, my mind was filled with countless speculations. Considering that I found myself on an astral plane, I could not understand the similarity of things here to those on earth. Lysias, my obliging and constant companion, was always ready to explain. Death of the physical body does not take man instantly to miraculous spheres. Every evolutionary process progresses trough graduation. There are countless planes for discarnate spirits, just as there are many wondrous regions for those still in flesh. All souls, feelings, forms and things are governed by the principles of natural evolution and hierarchy. Only the fact that I had stayed under treatment for so many weeks without a single visit from someone I had known on Earth worried me somewhat. Surely I was not the only one in my circle of friends and relatives to be struggling with the enigma of death. My parents had departed before me, as had various friends. Why, then, had none of them come to see me during my recovery, to bring a little cheer to my aching heart? I would have been satisfied with even a few moments of consolation. One day, when I could no longer silence my doubts, I asked my attendant, "Tell me, dear Lysias, is it possible to meet those who left the earth before us? Why, do you imagine yourself forgotten?" "Yes, in fact, I do. Why has no one come to see me? On earth I always relied implicitly on my mother's devotion. Yet to this day I have heard nothing from her, or from my father, who died 3 years before me." "Well, you are mistaken about your mother. She has been helping you night and day since the crisis you passed through before you arrived here. She doubled her assistance when you fell ill for the last time. You aren't aware yet, are you, that your stay in the lower spheres lasted over 8 years. In all that time she never lost hope, and often came to the astral city to intercede on your behalf. She enlisted the services of Clarence, who began visiting you frequently until the moment when you, the conceited earthly doctor, remembered that you were also a child of God. Do you see now?" I felt my eyes well with tears. I had not known that I had been away from the earth for so long. I wanted to speak, to find out about those unperceived efforts, but my vocal cords seemed numb. My heart was too full to allow me to speak. "On the day you prayed with all your heart," continued Lysias, "when you realized that everything in the universe belongs to our Almighty Father, even your tears were different. As you know, rain can at times be creative, at other times destructive. The Lord doesn't wait for our prayers to love us. Yet, just as a dirty mirror cannot reflect the light, it is indispensable for us to cleanse ourselves and build a receptive attitude in order to understand His infinite goodness. Thus, it is not the Father who needs our penance, it is we who need it for the inestimable service it renders us. Do you see? Clarence, in answer to your devoted mother's pleas, had no trouble finding you. It was you who took so long to find Clarence. I was told that when your mother heard you had broken through the shadows into the light, she wept for joy. And where is my mother now? I cried at last. If possible, I should like to see and embrace her, to fall on my knees at her feet. She doesn't live in the astral city, he informed me. She inhabits higher spheres where she works, not exclusively for you, but for the good of many. Noting my disappointment, he added, she is sure to come and see you. When one earnestly wishes for something, it is already half obtained. Here we have your own example. For years you wandered at random, a prey to fear, distress and disillusionment. Yet as soon as you felt the necessity for divine assistance, you expanded the range of your mental vibrations and obtained vision and help. Encouraged by the explanation I had just received, I exclaimed resolutely, then I wished it with all my heart, and she shall come. Lysias smiled knowingly, and as he took his leave he added this friendly advice. Right, but keep in mind that all deserving petitions should contain three basic prerequisites: an active will, persevering work, and merit. In other words, one must first wish, then work towards that wish, and finally be deserving of what he requested. He departed smiling, while I fell into deep meditation, wondering how such a vast program could have been expressed in so few words. Chapter 8, Administrative Organization. For the first time after some weeks under intense treatment, I ventured out in Lizier's company. The sight of the streets impressed me. The wide avenues, bordered with shady streets, which stretched out before us, were filled with pure air and an atmosphere of profound spiritual tranquility. Yet I saw no signs of inactivity or idleness anywhere. Instead, the city streets were crowded. I watched as the crowds passed by me. Some seemed absorbed in thought, while others smiled cordially as they passed. Lizier's, seeing my surprise, quickly began to explain. "We are now in the district of the Ministry of Assistance. Everything you see here, all of the buildings and houses, are either institutions where the activities of our jurisdiction are carried out or home for our working staff and instructors. In the ministry, patients are assisted, prayers are heard and sorted, earthly reincarnations planned and rescue groups promoted on behalf of those inhabiting the lower spirit zones or suffering on earth. Here all problems related to human suffering are examined and solutions studied." "So there is a Ministry of Assistance in the Astral City?" I asked. "And why not? All of our activities here are controlled by an organization which is constantly improving under the efficient supervision of those watching over our destinies. During our collective prayers, didn't you notice our governor, surrounded by his 72 assistants? They are the ministers of the Astral City. The colony, whose purpose is essentially work and accomplishment, is divided into 6 ministries, each under the direction of 12 ministers. The 6 ministers are named Regeneration, Assistance, Communication, Elucidation, Elevation, and Divine Union. The first 4 connect us with the Earth, the other 2 link us to the higher spheres. So you see, our spiritual city is really a transition zone. The coarsest, most material activities are carried out by the Ministry of Regeneration. The most sublime is the Ministry of Divine Union. Clarence, our friendly instructor, is one of the ministers of assistance. Never imagined the possibility of finding such a complete organization after the death of the physical body." "Yes," Lizier's continued, "the evil of illusion is very dense in the spheres of the flesh. The average man is unaware that all manifestations of order around him proceed from higher planes. Just as nature becomes a garden when tended by man, so the mind, dull in primitive creatures, is transformed into a creative force when inspired by consciousness functioning in higher spheres. Every useful organization on the material plane has its first roots in higher spiritual worlds. But does the Astral City have a history like the great cities of Earth?" "Certainly. All of the planes near the Earth possess their own specific nature and unique history. The Astral City is an old settlement, founded by a group of distinguished Portuguese pioneers who, after passing on, settled in the Spirits Plains over Brazil in the 16th century. According to the annals of our colony, these settlers at first encountered tremendous and exhausting difficulties here. There are obstacles in the invisible zones close to the Earth, just as there are on the Earth itself. Enormous areas with undeveloped potential here are comparable to the great tracts of forbidden terrain on Earth. The pioneers' work was indeed hard and discouraging, even for the stronger spirits. The area where delicate vibrations and majestic buildings now abound was also peopled with other more primitive inhabitants whose architecture reflected their elementary minds and who filled the atmosphere with their undeveloped thoughts. Still, the founders did not lose heart. They proceeded with their efforts, following the example of the old world settlers on the physical plane. Only they substituted persevering work, brotherly solidarity and spiritual love for violence, war and slavery. By this time we had reached a large, artistically designed square, filled with beautiful gardens. In its center stood a magnificent palace crowned with majestic and lofty towers whose tips reached so high they disappeared from sight. Here, where the government house now stands, the settlers placed the cornerstone of the colony. Pointing to the palace, he went on. "This square is the converging point of the 6 ministries I told you about. They start at the government house and stretch out in a triangular shape. Our devoted governor lives here. A staff of 3,000 individuals assist him in his administrative duties. He is the most earnest and untiring worker in the colony. The ministers travel at times to other spheres to renew their energies and acquire new knowledge, and we, too, have our habitual amusements. Only the governor has no leisure time whatsoever. While he insists that we take periodic vacations to rest, he himself works ceaselessly, sacrificing even his sleeping hours. It seems he finds his reward in never-ending service. I have been here for 40 years, and except for the collective prayers, I have never seen the governor at any public entertainment. Yet the radiation of his powerful mind reaches every branch of activity and his fatherly assistance involves everybody and everything here. After a long pause, the friendly attendant continued. Only a short time ago, we celebrated the 114th anniversary of his magnanimous administration. Lysias went on walking in reverent silence, while I, keeping pace with him, gazed in awe at the marvelous steeples which seemed to pierce the skies. Chapter 9, The Problem of Nutrition. Captivated by the sight of the magnificent gardens, I asked Lysias to rest with me for a while on a bench nearby, and he willingly agreed. I was filled with a pleasant feeling of peace, watching the graceful sprays of colored water rising in the air, forming intricate patterns. Whoever observes this immense colony of work, I said thoughtfully, is led to inquire about all sorts of possible problems. For instance, the problem of supply. There is no Ministry of Economy here, is there? That branch of Sir Ice, answered Lysias, used to assume much greater importance here. Then our governor decided to reduce, as much as possible, the number of practices which might remind us of purely physical phenomena. Therefore the activities of the Department of Supply were reduced to mere distribution, under the direct control of the central administration. As a matter of fact, this was a very important decision. Our records show that a century ago the colony underwent great trouble to adapt its inhabitants to the principle of simplicity. Many newcomers to the astral city, still imbued with earthly vices, insisted on the most extravagant accommodations, including sumptuous meals and stimulating drinks. Only the Ministry of Divine Union, owing to its inherent characteristics, shunned such abuses. The others spent their time overburdened with problems of this sort. Our governor, however, spared no efforts to put an end to the deplorable situation, introducing decisive measures against it the moment he assumed his administrative duties at the Astral City. Some of our older missionaries have told me about that time. They say that the governor's request 200 instructors came to us from a very high sphere in order to propagate new theories about respiration and the absorption of life-giving elements from the atmosphere. Numerous lectures were given on the subject. Many of our own experts were against those innovations on the grounds that, because the colony serves as a transition zone, it would be unjust and dangerous to submit newly arrived spirits to such drastic changes. They believed that such changes could cause serious damage to our patients' spirit bodies. But the governor did not give in. For 30 years the lectures, illustrative examples, and technical explanations proceeded without interruption. Various eminent spirits went so far as to formulate public protests against the governor's actions. They repeatedly crowded the Ministry of Assistance with patients who declared themselves victims of the deficient new diet. During such crises, those who were against the change intensified their attack. Yet the governor never resorted to punishment. Instead, he would summon his critics to the government house in a fatherly manner, expounding on the aims and benefits of the new program, emphasizing its superiority as an efficient means of spiritualization. For the most obstinate, he would arrange instructive excursions to higher spheres, winning over a great number of them. After a long pause, I said, "Please go on, Lysias. How did that edifying struggle end?" After 21 years of persevering efforts on the governor's part, the Ministry of Elevation gave in and cut its supplies to the strictly necessary. The Ministry of Elucidation, However, took a long time to follow this good example, owing to the greater number of statistics-minded spirits working there.